I'm Lino Ahmudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The novel coronavirus outbreak is still ongoing around the world. Despite the lower rate of infection in Africa, observers project that the African continent will be the next epicenter of the outbreak. As of May 18, there were 84,872 cases of COVID-19 in Africa. More than 32,000 people recovered and over 2,700 lost their lives. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Africa CDC, is at the forefront of the fight against COVID-19 on the continent. I spoke to Dr. Ahmed Ogwel Umah, Deputy Director of the Africa CDC. Take a listen.
Dr. Ahmed Ogwel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
There have been suggestions that Africa will be the next epicenter of the pandemic. So far, the numbers have been lower than other regions. What is being done?
We do not think that Africa is going to be an epicenter at the scale of what we've seen in Europe, in North America, and China. And the reason for that is because the lessons we learned from previous outbreaks have taught us that there are a few things that we need to do, including one, starting early. Africa started early. As soon as we saw the spread of COVID-19 to countries beyond China, we started preparing and building the capacity of our countries. Secondly is working in solidarity, neighbors supporting neighbors. In the beginning, we only had two countries that had the laboratory capacity to diagnose COVID-19. Today we have 52. It means that the resources, laboratory resources, the expertise on the continent has been shared and has built the capacity of other countries and other experts.
That's very encouraging. We know that testing is very much part of this strategy to prevent and also mitigate the pandemic. Can you talk to where Africa is in terms of testing capacities, whether it's rapid testing or just in general?
First is, as Africa CDC, we recommend PCR testing, not rapid testing. This is because we want to be sure that an individual actually does have the virus. That way, they are managed in an appropriate way. Secondly is the capacity for testing has been expanding. To date, we have distributed over 250,000 tests, and the testing is going on in a targeted way, where those who meet the certain criteria are the ones who are tested. And these numbers have been growing because more people are being exposed. The numbers growth has not been exponential as I've seen elsewhere because of the measures that governments in Africa have taken. We are hopeful that the measures are going to result in the numbers not going too far up. And with the new partnership that we have started last month, it is called the Partnership to Accelerate COVID-19 Testing Pact. This partnership is an initiative to increase the testing in Africa, where we intend to test 1 million Africans over the next 4 weeks and 10 million over the next 24 weeks. This is in an attempt to get a clearer picture what burden of disease we have for COVID-19 in Africa and therefore prepare for it appropriately. It is not a death sentence. And when someone knows that they have it and we can be able to isolate them, then we reduce the threat of our community transmission at high rates. If we keep the numbers low, then we keep the numbers of deaths low as well.
Now, speaking of testing, I would like your reaction on what is happening in Tanzania. President John Magufuli said that the tests are flawed. That's one of the reasons why the cases are spike in his country, that they tested fruits and goats, for example, and the tests came positive. What is your reaction to this?
The Africa CDC is procuring test kits from manufacturers that have been vetted. And we are very confident that the test kits that we are distributing to Africa are of good quality. They work. And we also follow up with the quality assurance. when tests are having problems, we know and we rectify. But in Africa today, all the tests that we have distributed to all the 55 member states are the tests that are not fake. They are tests that are good quality, and they are tests that are giving us results that are real. So long as a country has testing kits, so long as a country has the capacity to identify those who have been exposed, the tests that are being done are of good quality.
Let's talk about treatment. What are the recommendations to African countries with regards to treatment, given that there is no specific cure for COVID-19?
Right now, what we are recommending is supportive treatment. There is no cure, and that means that it is the body itself that is going to generate its own antibodies to be able to fight back and remove the virus from the system. We as Africa CDC have been building the capacity of clinicians for the last 3 or so months. Mm-hmm. And right now we have over 4,000 clinicians that have gone through our online training platforms, and they are being provided information about management of COVID-19 cases, those that are mild and those that are severe. The critically ill patients are being provided supportive treatment, and there is no treatment at the moment that we can be able to say we are supporting. Supportive treatment is based on an individual's presentation. It is based on an individual's need, and therefore there is no specific a set of treatment that so far we are advocating for. But we continue to work with partners both within Africa and outside to look for a vaccine and to look for specific therapy, and clinical trials are going on the continent and elsewhere.
What about solutions on the continent? What is happening in Madagascar with COVID organics? The Africa CDC has not really supported this initiative. What is the position of the centers with regards to local solution and particularly traditional medicine, given that it's part of Africa's culture, Africa's tradition?
As Africa CDC, we encourage innovation. Indeed, we know that there is capacity for innovation in Africa, and we are encouraging governments to provide the required environment for innovators to come up with possible solutions. We are also insisting with governments that we must base our innovation solutions on good science. And good science demands that any possible therapy is reproducible. Any possible therapy is safe, and any possible therapy is efficient. So in the case of Madagascar, we are in touch with the government there, and we are going to look at their data, and also we are going to facilitate multi-center trials so that their results can be reproducible. Whatever we come up with, we are going to make public. At the moment, we are still studying that information, and there is no decision that has been made by Africa CDC yet.
Let's talk about vaccines. Some people feel like Africans are being taken as guinea pigs, especially in this case where there was a controversy with some French researchers. Clinical trials, we know, are essential in vaccine and treatment development. So how do you regain the trust of communities who are skeptical while ensuring that they are protected in this process?
I think it is important first to condemn in the strongest possible terms those who were recorded and documented to be speaking negatively about Africans in as far as clinical trials are concerned. They do not meet the threshold of scientists, because scientists do not speak like that. Secondly, is that all clinical trials that are being done in Africa and we are supporting are meeting the gold standard of doing a clinical trial. They are not only being done in Africa. Each and every one of the clinical trials that are being done in Africa are multi-center based, and the same is being done elsewhere in the world. Unfortunately, because of those rather repugnant comments from some pseudoscientists, we ended up with a focus on Africa. But there are multi-center trials that are going on, and we are following gold standard protocols. Those candidate vaccines are safe. Those candidate vaccines are being looked for efficiency and efficacy. We are not allowing onto the continent any clinical trials that do not meet the global standards of safety and efficacy. Secondly, I would like to also confirm that when a candidate vaccine, candidate therapy has been identified, we must be confident and sure it has gone through the previous steps of laboratory work amongst small animals, big animals, before they can be taken to the human being. So there is no cause for alarm. There are no guinea pigs in Africa to be tested for candidate vaccine therapies that have not gone through the usual protocol. And we have enough capacity in Africa to do clinical trials. We did clinical trials for Ebola. There was no outcry. We did clinical trials for TB, for HIV. There's no outcry. But because of those unfortunate statements that came from pseudoscientists, this is why it's now right.
Lockdown measures have been implemented around the world, including in Africa. But we've seen in some countries that these measures have had a very, very terrible economic impact.
Indeed, we are helping. It is our mandate to be able to provide guidance and guidelines to governments, and we are doing that. In the course of next week, we will release a guideline on easing the lockdowns. And this is necessary because one, Africa's economy is largely a daily bread sort of economy, where people must go out, they must work, and then they earn for the day. It is there's no reserve for most people in Africa. In this way, the lockdowns and the social distancing distancing measures that the governments have taken were necessary to slow down the spread of COVID-19. And now new guidelines are coming out for easing of the lockdown. It is important that this is done in a manner that is good for the country, because you may end up chasing the economy and COVID-19 devastates your workforce. So it has to be done in an incremental manner, in a very well thought through manner. And we are issuing those guidelines next week. Having said that, I must add that the effect of lockdowns is going to be seen in the next few weeks because the numbers are telling a story that it has not been rising fast. The numbers are telling a story that transmission has been slowed down. And this is important for Africa because our health systems are fragile and we cannot afford to have many people exposed and many people critically ill. If that were to happen, then the health systems would be in a lot of trouble.
Speaking of health system, there is a concern that reallocation or allocation of resources to fight COVID-19 will put at risk the prevention and treatment of other diseases like malaria and measles. Is the Africa CDC ensuring that other diseases are still gaining the attention that they deserve?
From the very beginning of this outbreak in Africa, we have provided guidance to governments so that the normal health services do not stop. And key amongst those is that governments designate special areas, special facilities for managing COVID-19 cases, and the rest of the health system can be able to continue to do its work around the other ailments and the other conditions that the population is suffering from. We cannot afford to disrupt the normal health systems because it is a danger to society. If we disrupt it, then people will end up suffering and dying from other conditions, not just COVID-19. So our advice to governments is do not stop the other health services, continue with those, designate special facilities to after COVID-19 patients, and in the planning, other health services must still be at the core of the provision of health services.
Welcome back to Health Chat as we continue to look at the coronavirus pandemic. The outbreak of the novel coronavirus is affecting people around the world with no distinction of race, color, or social status. However, experts say the poor, people with disabilities, and other vulnerable groups can be disproportionately harmed. I spoke with Melinda Gates, co-founder of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to discuss how the foundation is contributing to the global fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. Melinda Gates said, among other things, addressing the needs of vulnerable population is a priority.
Well, we're still seeing it on the rise in so many places around the world. And I think one of the things we need to recognize as a global community is that COVID-19 anywhere is COVID-19 everywhere. And we're just starting to see the effects on the most vulnerable parts of the population. And I have to be honest, that's the thing that keeps me up at night.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation allocated $100 million to help the response with COVID-19, especially in South Asia and Africa. Let's talk about Africa and the priorities on the continent with regards to this fund in particular.
Yes. So one of the things our foundation has been doing actually for the last couple of years is working to make sure that the African CDC is very strong so that there can be an African response. So we continue to work with the African CDC. We are doing disease modeling very proactively to show as we get more and more data about how this disease spreads and who it affects the most in terms of vulnerable populations. We're putting that disease modeling information out there. And so we're trying then to take that to various countries like Southeast Asia, as you said, or many, many countries we're working with in Africa to say, here's what you need to do to prepare your health system for what's about to come. The other thing that we're doing is trying to make sure people understand that testing needs to happen for everyone, and it needs to happen in a very equitable way.
Massive testing is definitely one approach that experts are saying would be very critical on the continent. How much of the resources have been allocated, especially to testing, given that it's an important step when we talk about preparedness?
Yeah, so testing is fundamental. You have to know who's sick and who's not sick. And if you don't do testing and don't do contact tracing, you will get mass spread of this disease. And so what we need to make sure is that testing kits are available, that they can be easy to use. And also one of the things the foundation's been working on with the FDA here in the United States is working to show, could we have a home test kit available? Then you could get them out very broadly across Africa. Because as you know, one of the things that's going to be very, very difficult for somebody who lives in a township or who lives in a refugee camp is to social distance. So the only tools we have right now are physical distancing and washing our hands. I've been in many African settings where people don't have running water to wash their hands. So we absolutely have to help people understand who has this disease and who doesn't, and how do we help them self-isolate so that it doesn't become a widespread infection throughout an entire region.
So practically, how do we help vulnerable population, children, pregnant women, even refugees and others? What can we do in this case with COVID-19 to help them?
What do? We make sure, first of all, that they're fed. People need to be able to have a meal in every single day. They need to have food, because if you don't start there, if people don't have access to food, they have to go out and find food, bring food into their home. We know it's something we all need. So one of the most important things we can do right now, I feel, is tell people we need to put money into making sure that people actually have access to food. Then we have to make sure that women know if they're pregnant, where can you go safely to still do your prenatal appointments? Where can you go to safely deliver that baby? Don't deliver at home. We have to help, practically speaking, the primary health care system separate out the patients who come in who have COVID from, say, patients who come in and are pregnant. That is fundamental in terms of having the health care system still work and support women who are pregnant. So those are two very practical examples.
Even though right now Africa has less cases of infection of COVID globally, but health experts are still warning that there is a big risk on the continent. What do you see as the priorities then moving forward?
I think there's an enormous risk on the continent. I think we could see an explosion of disease. And so the priorities have to be making sure people are fed, then testing and doing contact tracing. And then from there, making sure the people who can physically distance, distance themselves. And then we need to make sure lots of protective gear gets out, this PPE that we're all talking about that healthcare workers wear, and masks, so that healthcare workers can protect themselves and keep the health system up and running so that those who are sick can still come in and get what they need. So we need to do a lot of modeling too, some on good data to say this is where the resources should go. And I think here in the United States, one thing we can do is make sure that we're not saying, oh, well, only the protective gear is for the United States or for Europe. We have to make sure it's distributed en masse equitably around the world. Otherwise, the most vulnerable are the ones who are going to lose the most in this disease.
Mrs. Gates, we saw during the Ebola outbreak that community trust, and it's not just with the Ebola outbreak, in general, community trust is such a big part of tackling outbreaks such as this one. There have been information out there, whether they're true or not, that are leading people to feel some mistrust. How do we build the trust at this stage when we hear so much information out there, whether it's about access to protective gears, whether it's about vaccine coming up?
My message is listen to the medical professionals and listen to the scientists. They are the ones to go to. They know what's going on. When your child is sick, you don't take them to your politician. You take them to the doctor. You take them, you learn the best science. So go to the credible websites. If I was in Africa, I would go to the Africa CDC website. They have the real information. And then spread that to your neighbors. This is a time we have to come together with unity. We saw it happen during the Ebola epidemic that happened. And we saw that communities at first were, you know, they said, oh my gosh, we have to distance ourselves from the funerals and not do the touching of the bodies. But once they learned that that was a transmission of the disease and that factual information was true, they did the right things and they helped tamp down Ebola in their communities. So we have to listen to the true experts during a pandemic like this.
Sometimes information doesn't trickle down to communities as much as they should. And the mistrust even is sometimes towards the government, towards leaders. How can leaders do a better job at informing their population so that they don't feel like there are some information that are being hidden, something is not very clear, or something is very suspicious? How can leaders do a better job?
I think leaders can put the experts forward and let them take the microphone. Let them take the interviews. Let them share the right information. So that is often a scientist or a medical professional. Those are the people to trust. You see it in the United States with Dr. Fauci really speaking out, and people understand that he's been in his job since 1984. He knows what he's talking about. He has seen epidemics before. He knows disease. Those are the types of people to listen to. And so in Africa, again, it's the scientists. It's the African CDC. Those are the medical experts who can tell us how to keep ourselves and our families and our communities safe.
When we think about what's happening in 2015, your husband, Bill Gates, delivered a TED Talk where he really warned people of the greatest threat that was coming up, which will be an infectious virus, highly infectious virus. Now, what has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation done in terms of encouraging the world to prepare?
Well, after that TED Talk that Bill did in 2015, we worked with the G7 and to really talk about the Ebola pandemic that had happened, and then to set up something called the Center for Epidemic Preparedness, it's called CEPI, to start to have a place where we could bring together the science of the world to prepare for an epidemic. Unfortunately, not very many leaders took up that rallying call. One of them who did, though, was Chancellor Merkel in Germany. She took it very seriously. And not much later, after she had led the G7, then we set up this CEPI organization. But to be honest, it was not well funded by governments around the world. And if it had been, we wouldn't be in such a terrible place right now in terms of understanding this disease and potentially having some more solutions.
And are we going to see a trend in the future? What do experts tell us in terms of this COVID-19 and what we should expect?
Well, I think we always need to be prepared as a world that there are going to be other infections coming, other viruses, and we have to plan for them. Just like we plan now for natural disasters, for an earthquake or for a fire, we actually have to run drills and scenarios of, okay, if we see disease outbreaks somewhere in the world, what do you do to immediately alert all governments, all centers for disease control, start to collect the right data by gender, by type of population, so the world can respond very quickly instead of in this more slow, sort of haphazard way that you're seeing this sort of patchwork quilt that's going on around the world?
And that's our show for today. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Log on to facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudo in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, be well, be safe, and wash your hands more often. Strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, African citizens depend on their leaders to implement specific strategies to fight COVID-19. African leaders respond to the coronavirus pandemic on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.